Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Ethics Talk. My name is Erica and tonight I am joined by Hope.
Hello.
And our special guests are Randy Schaefer.
Hi.
Who is the promotional manager of Invisible Children at Central Michigan University. And we are also joined by Caitlin Cheevers.
Hi.
And she is the president of Invisible Children at Central Michigan University. And so, as I just mentioned, we have two very special guests tonight, and the objective of our show is to discuss and understand CONEY 2012 at the local level, with Caitlin and Randy contributing to this discussion, and giving us some insight on this organization's recent release of the video CONEY 2012. And my first question for either of you to answer is, what is the CONEY 2012 campaign, and including its main objective? Can you just give us an overview of what this is?
Randy, do you have the phone or do you want me?
Yeah, Caitlin, you can go first.
Okay. So CONEY 2012 is, as you said, put on by Invisible Children, which has been working for the past 8 or 9 years to end a 26-year-long war in Central East Africa, where this man, Joseph Kony, has started a rebel army and is forcing children to fight in a war that's older than they are, and they are forced to become child soldiers and sex slaves. So Invisible Children has been working, and they've done other documentaries in the past, so this is just another one of the documentaries. And the goal is to make Joseph Kony famous so the international community will step up and recognize that not only Joseph Kony and his LRA and, like, this one conflict is unacceptable, but that all child soldiering cases throughout the world are unacceptable, and that these people who perpetrate these crimes need to be brought to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, as well as, in addition to that, they're trying to change what society is talking about and make it so that these types of, like, human rights issues and just things that are that we see that are wrong are the things that we talk about rather than just, like, Jersey Shore or, like, pretty much crap that we are currently talking about, and making it so that it's something a lot more meaningful that people are talking about.
Randy, do you have anything to add to that?
A lot like what Caitlin said, CONEY 2012, it's pretty much just giving a face to Invisible Children, and it's trying to make Joseph Kony as famous as possible. There have been war criminals who are guilty of, you know, child soldiering and sex slavery, that kind of thing, in the past that have been prosecuted, and nobody has known who they are, nobody has known what they've done. So the point of CONEY 2012 is to let everybody, the entire global community, know that, hey, even though this is going on a continent that you don't live on, that you might not be all too familiar with, we should still care about it, and we should still try to stop it. So the main point of CONEY 2012, it wasn't expected to go as completely viral as it did, but the point of it is to gain as much awareness as possible for Invisible Children and Joseph Kony.
Yeah, and while we're talking about the video overall, I think it's important to note that both Randy and Caitlin make a cameo in the video. So they are majorly involved with Invisible Children, and we thank them for their work. My second question for you guys, and Caitlin, you can answer this first, is what are the biggest challenges that the campaign has faced at the national level, and how has Invisible Children responded to these challenges?
There have been a lot of challenges. A lot of it is, the thing that bothers me the most personally is that a lot of it started from not necessarily, I don't know if illegitimate is the right word, but not necessarily trusted sources. They're just like blogs that people are writing about, and they're just like, oh, well, I saw this, and I don't like it, and blah, 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 you shouldn't like it either. And, I mean, a healthy dose of criticism is necessary. Like, it would be, I'd be worried if people were just like, oh my gosh, I saw this and I'm totally for it, like, let's go, without really thinking about the implications. But one of the main things that I've heard is that CONEY 2012 simplifies the issue, because it doesn't necessarily, people say that it doesn't necessarily make it clear enough that the LRA and Joseph Kony are not in Uganda anymore, and that current numbers are not 30,000 children, that's the total number over the past 26 years. And I would agree with that to some point. The thing that I like to say the most to that, this is not necessarily what Invisible Children says, But I personally say, like, if you watch the video, Jason says in the beginning, this is a 27-minute experiment, but for this experiment to work, you have to pay attention. And in the movie, they do say the LRA has moved into surrounding countries, DR, Congo, Central African Republic, and South Sudan, and they show on a map, like, the LRA moved out of Uganda and is no longer in Uganda. And it says, which has totaled 30,000 children. And I think Invisible Children's response to that is it's a very complicated issue, and we've tried to do those types of things in the past. Like, with the previous videos, they've done in-depth explanations of the history, and those haven't gone viral. Those are the ones where people are just like, oh my gosh, this is so much information. I'm checking out of this, and I can't, like, decipher what all this is saying. And so by simplifying it into saying, this is pretty much what's going on with, like, whether or not, like, this one little thing happened 10 years ago, it's still bad, and it's still something that we need to address. And so the idea is, by simplifying it, makes it easier for more people to understand what's going on, and therefore more people to demand that something positive comes out of it in terms of helping it come to an end.
Okay, and then another challenge that Invisible Children is facing is a lot of criticism about how the organization is spending its money. Invisible Children has directly addressed this itself, and rather than have me explain it, it would be best to check out InvisibleChildren.com. They have a complete breakdown of how all of the finances are spent. They've been audited every single year. They are a 401k, a 501c3 organization, sorry. And everything financially is completely sound. What trips a lot of people up is that Invisible Children, it's not an aid organization. It is an awareness organization. Invisible Children is very against giving handouts to the people of Uganda and the surrounding areas. They don't want to create a dependency. So rather than buy things for these people, they spend most of their money, yes, on traveling to Africa to produce these documentaries to create awareness for what is going on. And that's what kind of, you know, gets a lot of people upset, because Invisible Children would rather spend its money to raise awareness rather than to just hand out things to people. And I guess it's the American way of thinking that a lot of people don't quite understand that there are possible, that there are ways to help third world countries other than just giving them free stuff.
I think that's a really good point. And I think that that is like another, I think we've mentioned on this show before that, you know, sometimes you can be helping someone, but you're not getting at the bigger issue. And the bigger issue here is that there's this conflict, and what Invisible Children is trying to do is raise awareness so the conflict can end. And so these handouts would only help people while the conflict persists, right?
Correct.
Okay. And Hope, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to go back to the goals of the Kony 2012 campaign and video, because two different goals were mentioned, and I think it's important for us to understand which goals are means to a further goal. So there's the goal of making Joseph Kony famous. There's the goal of capturing him and sending him to The Hague. And then there's this other goal that Caitlin mentioned of changing the conversation in our culture from crap to meaningful stuff. And I would like to suggest that it's this goal of changing the conversation in our culture that is the primary goal, and making Joni Kosoff famous is a means to that goal. So they're like, it's a goal, of course, but some goals are means to further goals. And so I would just throw out there that how I understand the campaign, and perhaps this wasn't the intent when Invisible Children was created, and as I understand it, and perhaps Caitlin and Randy can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way that the whole thing came about was really Jason Russell meeting Jacob and this personal interaction with this little boy and this promise that Jason made to Jacob, like, I will stop it. I will do everything in my power to stop it. So it's like this personal thing. Is that correct? Is that just like a myth, or is that how you understand the...
That's my understanding of it.
The energy of it.
Yeah, that's what I got from it as well, is that the goal of making Kony famous is part of the overall goal of ending this war and sending Joseph Kony to The Hague.
No, but I'm asking the it's like the energy which created Invisible Children, right? I mean,
right.
The extreme amount of passion and energy and genius behind it arises out of this personal interaction between Jacob, this little boy, and Jason.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like Jason promising Jacob, I will stop it. Like, you listen, like, I will stop it. And so, like, this is his effort to make good on his word. And
yeah.
I just think that's really beautiful. And I give it up to that.
Right.
And, like who knows? Like, who knows what unfolds once you take that promise seriously? And so perhaps, like, the original intent was always to stop it this way. But now, given the power that the organization has, like, there is this broader goal of changing the conversation to stop these deeper problems. Because CONI, as you've mentioned, is just, like, one of many sore spots in the world.
Yeah, that's something that I've actually wondered about, is, like, how will the organization proceed, or how would they proceed if CONI was brought to justice, and, like, what would happen then? So I'm sure that's something that nobody really knows right now, because that problem isn't here, that issue, but I think that's something interesting to think about in the greater issue of this problem occurring in more than just one place.
And Ben actually has put out a statement, because Ben Kesey, just for context for the listeners, is the CEO of Invisible Children, and I believe it was like the 13th or 14th of March, just a couple weeks ago, he started putting out videos periodically. People tweet at Invisible, so it goes right to Invisible Children with the hashtag #AskICAnything, just that it makes it more transparent, like they can ask any question, and they'll choose a couple questions a day and answer them in a video. And that was one of the questions that he had gotten, was what happens to Invisible Children once Joseph CONI is captured. And he said that once Joseph CONI is captured, focus will be on, like, depending, the hope is if Joseph CONI is captured, he's captured at the same time as the other top commanders, but if that doesn't happen, then the like, focus would shift to the other top commanders, the other ones that have arrest warrants out for them by the ICC. Their names escape me right now. I know Vincent O.T. is one of them, but his, like, whether or not he's alive is in question. But the other two, the focus would shift so that they are the target of similar campaigns, or just trying to make sure that they're arrested as well. And then he said that he believes that it will stay on, like, the region that was affected by the conflict, and promote the recovery of the, like, affected areas. So, just to answer that.
And then going kind of into the recovery of the affected areas, Invisible Children, like I said, while it is an awareness organization, it is trying to, you know, better the lives of those who have been affected by the LRA. And the gist of the recovery efforts, Invisible Children has in place what it calls a protection plan, where it is building a full-scale rehabilitation center to help kind of get those affected by the LRA back to a right state of mind, although there's no way for them to ever fully recover. It'll be a huge step in helping them. The protection plan is also funding radio towers so that remote villages can communicate and evacuate if LRA troops are coming near. And also, the third part of the protection plan is to fund rescue teams that can go out into the fields and help, you know, they can go find those children that have defected from the LRA and, you know, take them to the rehabilitation center and try to reunite them with their families.
So, moving on from that, if everyone's had a chance to say...
I think another challenge that Invisible Children...
Oh, that's okay, good. No, I'm glad.
Another challenge that slipped my mind until now is Jason Russell. Jason Russell, unfortunately, he had, for those who don't know Jason Russell, the founder, had a nervous breakdown that came from... There's a... Caitlin, do you know the name of the condition he was...
I believe they just called it, like, a temporary...
Right, it was
something.
I'm not sure of the exact term, but because CONI 2012 went so viral, Jason hadn't slept in 9 days, and he was facing severe dehydration and malnutrition, and basically he ended up having a breakdown. A lot of what happened was greatly exaggerated in the media. Witnesses had claimed certain things while other things had happened, but he was detained by police and then hospitalized for psychiatric evaluation. And the timing of that came at a very, very bad time, and that's another challenge that Invisible Children has faced. I don't know if Caitlin wants to go more into detail or if any more details needed.
I would say that's pretty much it. And then another thing that I also just thought of is another criticism that people have been saying is that not necessarily for Invisible Children, but for the way that we're going about hopefully capturing Joseph Kony is that the U.S. troops, the 100 U.S. troops that President Obama deployed in October, are working with the Ugandan army, the UPDS, and a lot of people have been pointing out that the UPDS have been the perpetrators of plenty of human rights violations in the past, and I do like that that's being pointed out because it is a very good thing to keep in mind, but at the same time, it's important to also remember that there really aren't any other armies in the area that can help because South Sudan is just becoming its own nation. They just became, like, it's been less than a year since they became their own sovereign state. So they don't have a military yet just because they're so new. Central African Republic does not have its own army, and the Democratic Republic of Congo is a failed state. So really it's just the Ugandan military. And in addition, they have been improving they've been stopping their human rights violations. They've been put into check a lot, especially because the American government is getting involved. No army has a perfect record. I mean, even the American government and the American army doesn't have a perfect record. So as long as they're improving, I still think that it's important that we work with them because they are the only ones that we can really work with right now.
I have something that I kind of want to ask about, and it relates to what Randy talked about just a minute ago about how Jason Russell did have a breakdown just because of the overwhelming reaction to this video. And so I also want to know, like, what has happened in the organization to respond to this massive attention to this video and this issue. And you guys have mentioned before to me that the kits that you got, is it the awareness kit?
The action kit.
The action kits, yeah, they're running out, and everyone at, is it like their headquarters? They have it in San Francisco, right?
Yeah,
it's San Diego. It's just working away to catch up, but they're just unable to meet the demand right now. So if you could talk about that a little bit, or just clarify if that's really happening or what their plan is to go from here or how that might affect Cover the Night.
Well, I talked to Brianna Santos. She's one of the roadies that will be coming to Central Michigan University on April 17th and 18th. And she said that they are currently, well, my understanding of what she said is they are keeping everything out of stock online and then giving all of the merchandise to the roadies. So the people who come to the screenings are the ones who get the merchandise. So the roadies have action kits. So for those listeners who are in the Mount Pleasant area who are able to come to one of the two screenings that we're having, if you want an action kit but couldn't get it online, you'll be able to get it when we have our two screenings on April 17th and 18th. They are pretty sure they're going to be getting an order in before then, but I believe the focus is on getting it to the roadies so that the roadies are able to sell them to the people directly, because that, A, cuts down on shipping costs for the people buying it, and it makes it more of a personal interaction.
But everything that's already been ordered online will obviously still be shipped, and orders haven't been canceled or anything.
Yeah. And I believe they are trying to, because originally they had posted something saying that the orders could not be fulfilled. They couldn't guarantee that the orders would be fulfilled by April 20th. And I got an email probably about a week ago saying their goal is to get everything out by April 13th. So there are plenty of people in the San Diego area, or just the Southern California area in general, that have been traveling to their headquarters and volunteering to help them get everything out to people as fast as possible.
Cool. And one more question that I also have is, in the video, it mentioned how one of the aims of the campaign was to reach out to, I think, was it 20 celebrities and 12 politicians, or was it the other way around? Yeah, and how has that been going? I'm just curious about, like, what kind of response you've gotten from those celebrities and politicians you targeted. Caitlin or Randy?
I guess celebrity-wise, it's been going pretty well. I don't think Invisible Children has targeted all of its intended 20 celebrities, but when Kony 2012 went viral, celebrities on Twitter, we started compiling a list of celebrities that had posted a link to the video, and there are a lot of them. Caitlin, can you think of some examples? Help me make a short list?
Well, I'm looking at the list right now of the 20. And of the 20, we for sure have Oprah. We for sure have Angelina Jolie. We for sure have George Clooney. Justin Bieber. Ellen DeGeneres. I believe Ben Affleck. I know he's been to the area, so I'm sure he's all for it. Rihanna. Taylor Swift had tweeted about it, but she deleted her tweet. So I don't know where she stands right now. But I know, like, Emma Stone has tweeted about it. There have been a lot, like, an overwhelming about, like, Diddy, I know. P. Diddy tweeted about it. A lot of people.
And then even a lot of celebrities that weren't on Invisible Children's intended list of 20. So that's been good. And then on the politician side, I know, Caitlin, there's been a lot of support from politicians. Caitlin, you have the exact list up, right?
Yes. I know Senator Patrick Leahy, I think that's how you pronounce it. He's from Vermont. What is it?
Leahy,
thank you. Senator Leahy visited a university in Vermont, and he made a public statement saying that he's all for Coney 2012 and what it stands for. So that's one of them. I know Mitt Romney, I don't believe he has responded specifically to Coney 2012, but he did put out a statement before the video was even released, saying that he, basically saying he doesn't stand with the president for many things, but he does stand with the president on many issues, but he stands with the president on sending 100 troops into Central East Africa to get the LRA out. So while it's not specifically for Coney 2012, he has talked about the LRA, how he thinks that it's good that like America is trying to help with the issue. But the other ones, I don't know specifically who of these people, other than those two, have mentioned it, but there's President Bush, Condoleezza Rice, John Kerry, President Clinton, Harry Reid, John Boehner, Kay Granger, Stephen Harper, who's the Canadian Prime Minister, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, and then Congresswoman Ilina Ross-Leighton. Something from Florida. It's a lot of letters out of the normal order that I'm used to, so I'm bad at pronouncing things like that. But she's a congresswoman from Florida. So those are the ones, in addition to Senator Leahy and Mitt Romney, are the 12.
Cool. Thank you for explaining just that type of response that you've received from those individuals. And I didn't know that, so I'm happy to hear that you've received all that support. Next, I'd like to read a quote from, or do you have it? Read a quote from Alex Dewall, either one, from the World Peace Foundation. And so here we go. In elevating Coney to a global celebrity, the embodiment of evil, in advocating a military solution, the campaign isn't just simplifying, it is irresponsibly naive. Big man-style rulers, of which President Yoweri Museveni is one, prefer to dismiss their opponents as disturbed individuals and like to shortcut civil politics by military action. The let's get the bad guy script is a problem, not a solution. Millions of young Americans are being told about a bizarre and murderous African cult. They are also being told that for 25 years, Africa has been waiting for America to solve this problem, which can be done by capturing Africa's crazed evildoer and handing him over to international justice. And they are led to believe that what has stopped this from happening is that American leaders don't care enough. The apologists for Invisible Children call this raising awareness. I call it peddling dangerous and patronizing falsehoods. So as I just said, that's a quote from Alex Dewall from the World Peace Foundation. And I'd just like us to discuss in, you know, how each of us feel about this quote from him. Caitlin or Randy, do you guys want to first glance at it or hope?
Well, I guess one of the main things that Invisible Children is emphasizing with Coney 2012 is that it's not political, it's human rights, and it's just the right thing to do. And that a lot of what I think is that, you know, just because you live in one country, why should you not care about those outside of your country's borders? We all live on the same planet, so I feel that we should all try to help each other. While I agree that the campaign is very simplifying, I don't think that because it is simple, it is naive. If you are interested, Invisible Children has a dozen other documentaries that you can check out that you can learn more about. There are similar organizations, Resolve UNEF. I know the International Criminal Court website has information about this on it. There are dozens of other places that you can get information if you are further interested in this matter. Caitlin, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Yeah, and I would say, let me just look up the quote again just so I can let it all sink in. I definitely agree with what Randy said, in that it shouldn't be an America and Africa thing. It should just be a people thing. Because, like, yes, these, like, national boundaries exist, but they're really just labels. And I know there's a big political structure behind them, but, like, they're people, and I care about them because I have friends that have been affected by it. So it'd be just the same as if something happened in England and people in England that are my friends were being affected by it and I wanted to do something about it. I think that just because it's Africa doesn't mean that it's, like, the United States going in and trying to fix their problem. It's just, because, I mean, I don't know how to say this in the best way, but, like, there are a lot of problems in Africa, and this is just one of them, but there are a lot of problems in America. There are plenty of problems in Europe. Like, there are problems in Asia, too. Like, there are problems everywhere. And while they might seem more dramatic in Africa, that doesn't necessarily mean that we can't still help, and that, like, it's not that we're trying to fix all their problems. We're, like, going in to try to get this one guy. And the people in, like, DR Congo and some people from Uganda and, like, people in the affected region have said, like, just like Randy said before, like, Invisible Children doesn't like giving out handouts. That's because the people in Congo have been like, we don't want clothes. Like, we don't need your handouts. We had a perfectly good life before this. Just get Joseph Kony out. And they're civilians in a very, like, tough environment, not in terms of, like, it's hard for them to live, but just in terms of, like, it's the Garamba Forest. It's the densest forest in the world. And it's very hard to find people, and they're unarmed, so they can't just do it themselves. So they need the resources that other countries, and I'm not necessarily saying that just America has these resources, which is why other people, like, I know people are targeting, like, politicians in Europe. Like, it doesn't have to be in America going in to help Africa thing. It's just people from all over the world who have the things that people need are going in to offer to help. And they're like, please help us. We need your help. They're asking for our involvement in it.
Hope, do you have anything you want to add?
Not really. I just want to echo, I think it was Caitlin and Randy said it, but this importance in simplifying, you know, this quote really sort of misses the point. And one thing that I know people are jealous about regarding Invisible Children is its ability to spread information so quickly in such a powerful way, and in a way that people in international relations have not been able to do, because it is very complicated and you will lose people at, you know, the first paragraph. So to the mere act of pointing, you know, the oversimplification, I think, is so educationally necessary. Because it's emotional. And once that emotion is there and your attention is there, then you want to learn more, hopefully. So I completely disagree with the quote, and I think it's speaking to people who already know about the problem. I think the audience here are people who already know. And this, I think, what Invisible Children is doing, something that nobody else in America is doing, which is educating, like, the average person about international relations, and so I say bravo to them for simplifying, because it's absolutely necessary. And
right.
as a teacher, like, I understand that.
Right.
And they're teaching, that's what they're doing. And the fact that we're having this conversation, the fact that conversations are happening that weren't happening before, it's a really, really exciting thing to watch.
Right. And then also what Invisible Children is trying to do is it is trying to raise awareness to those who don't know what the conflict mm-hmm. is. And if you're going to be talking to average people about this, you need to use, you know, average means of communicating, average mm-hmm. language, average visuals. You need to get it across in, like, the simplest way possible, because Invisible Children is trying to reach those who haven't heard of this conflict before. So obviously for a lot of us who know what the LRA is and what exactly is happening, it's going to seem dumbed down. But for the hundreds of thousands of people who don't know what Invisible Children is, this is a great way to reach out to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, the society that we live in, like, I don't want to say this and make it seem like I live in I'm part of a generation of idiots, because it's not what I mean. But we live in, as Luis Moreno Ocampo so beautifully said in Coney 2012, we live in Facebook world. We live in a world where, like, 30-second YouTube videos of cats is, like, the biggest thing. Like, people want it fast, and they want it now. And, like, reading a 10-page article on the history of the conflict isn't going to cut it. I'm really entirely shocked. The fact, not necessarily about the fact that people seem to actually care about what's going on at Coney now, because that just seems, like, instantaneous. Like, you find out about it, and you, like, care. The thing that, like, made me the most shocked about this entire thing is that it's a 30-minute video that went viral. Like, I didn't know that someone would be able to, like, stay interested in our society for an entire 30 minutes. Like, and I don't mean to say that in, like, a we are, like, the most ADD population ever. I just mean it in a, like, it's not something that I've seen happen in the past. Like,
right,
the videos that go viral are girls singing about a day of the week, or a cat that's, like, flushing a toilet for, like, 30 seconds. Like, it's not a 30-minute video. It's just, like, it baffles me that.
Right, and then it also helps, like,
it's an instantaneous society. Yeah.
And then our generation, we're just so, like, obsessed with multitasking and having, you know, 7 tabs open on one browser at a time and, you know, brushing your teeth while talking on the phone and doing your homework and feeding your cat at the same time, that it is kind of astounding for people to actually sit down for 27 whole minutes and watch this video. And it's not that we're a dumb generation. It's just that the way that the internet works, it's just made it so hard for us to focus.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on that point and say what I think is so brilliant about Invisible Children is its focus on one guy. Like, the importance of focusing on one. And really, like, my husband always says, an inch wide and a mile deep. You know, it's like an inch wide and a mile deep, and that's the most meaningful. And I would just like to throw out there that when we're talking about attention and focus, so there's, like, the attention and focus that you can have when you're watching a 30-minute video, and then there's the attention and focus that you have, like, with your actions and your commitments in life. And I would also like to applaud Jason Russell for many years sticking with this project, because that's also something that is rare. And also you all for sticking with Invisible Children for so long, because it's very common for someone to go from one activity to another activity. It's actually a norm now. It's expected that you're sort of jumping around from one thing to another. And to get something done, you have to commit. The research shows 10 years. You got to put in a good 10 years to actually make real progress. And so I would hope to see that the attention and the focus that we're talking about is not just at this level of watching a screen, but involves, like, commitment with our bodies for at least 10 years. That's it.
When you were saying that, I just have to say that, yeah, like, that's a lot of years that Jason Russell has already committed to this, and it's just so, like, it's inspiring because, I mean, this can't have been easy. He made this organization by himself, and there had to have been times where he was literally like, what am I doing with my life? But he kept with it, and I think, like, those are the people that, when you look back in history, like, they really did make a difference. And if Jason Russell should ever hear this, I want him to know that, like, we appreciate that the work that you've done, and, like, yeah, we understand, and I can see why it would get hard at times, but it's, like, amazing work that this organization has done and to have created it is something really special.
Can I also add something? This is I'm gonna let the chinchillas out now.
Please.
Which is adjacent. This is my phrase for sort of like letting your freak flag fly and so forth, just letting it out. But so when I heard that Jason Russell had a quote breakdown, my immediate and instinctive response was, you know, smear campaign. Like it's just a media smear campaign because of the power that Kony 2012 has had. And I immediately thought of, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but the movie Michael Clayton with George Clooney.
Nope.
Okay, mm-hmm. it's a really good movie, and it's about an attorney who's been working on a corrupt case. He's actually been defending the evil corporation. And he has a moment of clarity where he strips naked and, you know, in a deposition, and he strips down naked, and I'm thinking, Jason Russell's not having a nervous breakdown. He's just having a moment of clarity. That is really what I thought. And then I watched Michael Clayton, and I was like, oh, I understand this movie now. But it's not the case that he's having a breakdown. It could be that he's having, a moment of clarity and that it represents itself to us as something strange and bizarre. And I think that, he's just bringing something new into the world, and it manifests itself in forms that we're not accustomed to, and so we label them as breakdown. Maybe he really is, but I just want to say it did occur to me for a moment that, no, just a moment of clarity.
Right, and then a lot of the media's exaggeration of what had happened during that event probably didn't help contribute anything positive to it, so,
yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that would have been like for him. And now switching gears a little bit here, I'm really interested in hearing from both of you, Caitlin and Randy, about how you guys became involved with Invisible Children and sort of what your role is at CMU's chapter now and, you know, everything that this entails. And I know that you've done some work on the national level, too, with the organization. So just give us an overview. Caitlin, you
okay.
Can go first.
So it's kind of a long story. I'll try not to give you the 45-minute version because that would be most of the show, which we don't even have time for that anymore. So the simplified version, I got one of the DVDs from my sister for Christmas in 2007, and I watched it. I didn't really get it or how I could help or anything because I was in high school at the time, and we didn't really have an outlet or any sort of club or any group where I could go to, like, talk about it or get involved or do anything for it. So I just kind of like let it go. And then senior year of high school, I had a social justice class, and my teacher brought in a girl who had graduated from my high school and went to Central, actually. And she came to show the rescue of Joseph Kony's Child Soldiers, which was one of their newer documentaries at the time. And there was a national event that was going to happen. And I'm from Grand Rapids, and one of the, 110 cities across the country was Grand Rapids. So it's like, oh, perfect. Like, I'm in high school, so I probably can't get too involved right now still just because my schedule is so confined. But it's in my hometown. It's something that my parents can agree to. I won't be driving 6 hours to do something like this. And it, is something that I can do. So what we did is we abducted ourselves, quote-unquote, and we met at one place. We met at Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum in Grand Rapids, and we walked in silence. I know everyone in, the various cities walked anywhere from 2 to 4 miles in silence holding a rope, and you were only allowed to take with you what you could carry, just like the children who are abducted by the LRA. And we walked to what they called the LRA camp. In Grand Rapids, it was Rosa Parks Circle, and we stayed there, and we refused to leave until we got media attention and until someone that was famous in our community came, recognized what we were doing, and said, I know what this conflict is. I know what Invisible Children is. I'm going to do whatever I can to help you in this conflict. And Grand Rapids is actually the second city in the nation to get rescued. We were rescued by Hank Meyer, who's now the CEO of Meyer, son of Frederick Meyer. And so we were done by, 6. And then other people went on to different cities. I wasn't able to because, again, my parents wouldn't let me. But then when I came to CMU in that fall of that year, I joined our club, got involved. The second semester I became secretary. And then after that semester I became the vice president. And then after, I believe it was it was either half a semester or a semester and a half, I forget. It's been a blur. But I became president halfway through one of the semesters. And so now I just kind of run the group. I see any sort of opportunities for working with other RSOs or businesses or just other groups in general. For example, ICCSN, we work together. And just, like, try to form those groups and just kind of try to coordinate as much with what Invisible Children is putting out, any sort of events that they do, with what we can do on the local level, both at CMU and in, like, the Mount Pleasant area as well.
Randy?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Caitlin, save me from having to explain the rescue, but our stories are kind of similar. Back when I was in high school, I graduated in 2007, so my senior year of high school, one of my friends brought Invisible Children to my attention, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I'll, you know, check it out when I have more time, and it kind of got pushed to the back of my mind. But I ended up having to go to a screening. Caitlin mentioned earlier, roadies, representatives of Invisible Children, will drive across the country to show Invisible Children's featured film of the semester. I actually had to go to a screening for one of my classes, and the film that was chosen was The Rescue. So I was like, oh, that looks like fun. It's a great opportunity to go to Chicago. So I ended up going to The Rescue, and as soon as I got back that semester, which was in 2009, I joined my organization, the Invisible Children Organization on CMU's campus, and a few weeks later I was put on eBoard as the promotional manager, which I thought was kind of cool. And then that summer I traveled to Washington, D.C. to actually lobby for the bill, the LRA Disarmament and Northern Uganda Recovery Act of 2009, which is Senate Bill 1067, which has been passed into a law. And that's kind of where I thought that was really cool that I was able to do something like that and, you know, actually make a difference, which is how I got so into Invisible Children. And so now I'm on eBoard. I've been on eBoard since 2009. And my role as promotional manager, I basically work, there's two of us. We work to design flyers. We work to promote our RSO and to kind of just make it known across campus what we do and who we are and try to get the word out to as many people as possible about our events and our screenings. So.
Okay. And we...
I think there's a caller. So...
One day, 1 hour.
Whoa. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, are that.
Hello.
Okay.
I don't know what that was. Sorry about that.
Well, one thing that I did want to ask you guys about, because I've never really had you, just a couple minutes, if you can explain. You said you went to the national conference. So what did you do there, and how did you collaborate with other chapters? Or is it? It was essentially like a national conference, right? This fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to take
Randy? Caitlin.
Okay. So Randy and I, along with our vice president Lindsay Fent, went to what they call the Fourth Estate, and it's a conference. There was 650 of us, mostly between the age of like 14 or 15 to about 25-ish. So there were some teachers as well, but just a wide range of people from all over the world, not even just America, but like I know there were people from Spain, there were people from Great Britain, United Kingdom, and like all over. And there were a lot of public speakers, and it was just like a really eye-opening experience because I've been enrolled with Invisible Children for a while, but it made me feel more a part of Invisible Children because we were just in like an auditorium and Jason and Jedediah were on stage, or like Laren would get up and talk about the LRA Crisis Tracker, and it was like it was real, and they're real people, and it just kind of drove that idea home along with like these speakers that we heard. Like they were some brilliant people there that I'd never even heard of, and I like almost felt angry that I had never heard of these people before. Like the like there were people who have been to like Rwanda or places in like Southeast Asia where there are like human rights abuses, and they have been working to stand up for people's rights on a more individual level. And I just thought that it was really cool that, like, even they were Invisible Children through this conference wasn't even just promoting itself to its supporters. It would bring in other nonprofit organizations and be like, look, we right now want you guys to use this motivation to help the world however you want. Whether you want to stick with us as Invisible Children, that would be awesome. But if you want to go with one of these other nonprofit organizations, that's totally fine. We just want you to use this momentum that you have and run with it. Like, just do something that's beneficial to the world. Don't get sucked into the, like, corporate life. And I just thought that was really cool and, like, really eye-opening that it's not necessarily just about invisible children. It's about human rights and, like, creating a better future in general.
Right. And that kind of goes along also with the whole Kony 2012 thing is that a lot of people, they're not supporters of invisible children. Just because you're not a supporter of invisible children doesn't mean you shouldn't support Stopping Kony. Even if you disagree entirely with invisible children, how it spends its money, what it does, that gives you no reason to not support Stopping Kony. But another thing that goes along with the conference, it's kind of hard to explain. It was only 2 full days that we were there. But one of the things that the conference was great for, actually, was networking with other Invisible Children club members from across the entire country and outside of the country, Caitlin mentioned. And also, a lot of the sessions, Invisible Children gave us a lot of information about the organization and about the history of the war, which is so, so very useful to those of us who are this involved with Invisible Children, so we know exactly what we're talking about, and we know without a doubt that, you know, what we're saying is true because we've had the founders of Invisible Children standing on stage just telling us this. So,
another question that I have for you guys, and something that was mentioned right before the radio show, relates to this, is what new challenges has the Kony 2012 campaign presented to your work at the local level? And one of the phrases that was used was Kony fatigue. So I just want you guys to touch on that if you can, and just talk about any other challenges at the local level that you guys have faced. So maybe, Randy, you want to take this first?
Sure. A lot of the challenges that we're facing at Central Michigan University are similar to what a lot of our friends at other universities are facing, is that people didn't know that Invisible Children existed until Kony 2012 mm-hmm. came out. So when Kony 2012 came out, we're on Facebook seeing all these groups and all these events pop up for Invisible Children at CMU, this event at CMU, Cover the Night at CMU, and we're like, no, guys, we're here. We've been here for 5 years. Hi, get in touch with us. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the challenges. It's absolutely great. Don't get me wrong. It's great that so many people are willing to get, like, jump in on this. But it's kind of frustrating from our point to try to, like, contain all this madness and get everyone back to us and get everyone on the same page. And another challenge was brought up earlier is that so many people, the attention span, going back to the attention span thing, mm-hmm. is that a lot of people, they have the attention span to watch this 27-minute video, and they're like, oh, this is great. I want to do something about it. And 2 weeks later, they completely forget about it. So we're kind of at the stage now where I can't speak on behalf of everyone else, but I'm a little afraid that, you know, the momentum that people had is going to disappear.
Caitlin?
Yeah, and going off of that too, with the momentum thing, is people are like, oh, I saw the video, I want to put up posters. It's like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. We love putting up posters, but, like, will you help us lobby about this resolution about that's in Congress right now, and they're just like, wait, what? And it's like, it's more than putting up posters. And I mean, putting up posters is great, but I think it's also good to point out, and this is just kind of like something that I find a little humorous. The idea of Cover the Night was originally to get people wondering who Joseph Kony is, and it's like, everyone knows now. And I mean, we're still going to do it because it's something that's fun. Like, I know Randy and I have both talked about this, is that we join Invisible Children because it's a good cause. We stuck with it because it's something that's fun. Like, they make it something that's enjoyable and something that I want to stick with because it's something that I can, like, have fun doing. So, like, putting up posters is great, but it's more than just that. Like, it'll still be helpful, but there's other things that we need to do as well beyond just putting up posters. And I think one of the biggest responses has been, like, oh, how can I help with Cover the Night? And it's like, well, you can do this, but can you also help us with this? And there hasn't been as much positive response from that, I've noticed, at least with the people that I've talked to, just because, like, lobbying with, like, senators isn't necessarily as fun as going out and putting up posters at midnight with war paint, but it's still something that's, like, critical. And that's one of the challenges that I've faced on the local level since Kony 2012.
Yeah, and everything you just said I think relates to Hope earlier, talking about how people's attention to things just in our society I believe Hope said this. Yeah, Hope said this.
Doesn't
like,
matter. We're all the same person.
We're like
we're on the same page.
We're just like young people, especially too. Like can't stay focused on something for that long, and so I think the cover of the night is like a quick thing. Like you can just be focused on putting up posters, whereas these other projects would involve a little bit more work. And either people just don't have the time to give, or they just maybe are intimidated by the process of becoming more aware about it in order to carry out these acts. So something else that I want to ask you guys about is, like, Cover the Night and how exactly you're organizing it here at this level. And then because we've all heard and we saw the video about how, you know, nationally it's going to be occurring in all these different cities, but what are you doing here in Mount Pleasant?
Well, I guess a lot of that depends on Coney 2012 Part 2. Am I right, Caitlin?
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a Coney 2012 Part 2, actually, that's coming out. I think it's this week, if I'm correct. And that's going to give a lot more details to Cover the Night and what exactly the details are. Like Caitlin said earlier, this wasn't meant to be a huge thing. Cover the Night was, you know, people weren't supposed to know about what Coney was until after, like, Cover the Night was supposed to bring awareness to that. So I guess now that it's kind of turned into this huge thing, Invisible Children, I don't think, is exactly sure what they're going to, how they're going to go about handling Cover the Night. So they're putting something together in Coney 2012 Part 2 that's going to be released next week. Or is it this week, Caitlin, if I have this right?
I think it's this week.
This week?
At some
okay.
point.
So right now, we're not entirely sure what we're doing as a club on campus. A lot of it, like I said, depends on what is said by Invisible Children in Coney 2012 Part 2.
Yeah, and my,
about that video
my vision for what's
watch.
Happening, and of course this will change if it drastically differs from what Invisible Children wants, but the other problem is with CMU's campus specifically. I'm not really worried about Mount Pleasant right now, but the problem that we're having with CMU's campus, and I guess this goes back to challenges that we're having at the local level, is that to be like as an RSO, there are only so many places that we can put posters. And it's literally, you can put them on public bulletin boards. There should be at least one in every building, and you can chalk. You cannot put posters on the outside of buildings. You can't put them in walls, in the hallways that aren't public bulletin boards. You can't, like, put them, you can't duct tape them to the ground. You can't put them on light posts, nothing. And, of course, we're doing this on a Friday night. Most of the buildings are going to be closed. So that literally leaves us with chalking. So my vision is we're just going to be chalking campus. Not sure about that yet. But we need to, like, we can't get shut down, and if we start putting posters everywhere, we might get shut down, which would be really bad. So we're going to try to stick with the rules that, like, the Office of Student Life at CMU gives us, as well as the vision that Invisible Children gives us.
Just a side comment, I think it would be cool, too, if, like, some people that live in the dorms had them in their windows, so, like, when you looked up at these buildings, all you saw was, like, a bunch of pictures of...
That would be sweet.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
I like that.
Yeah. So that's a thought. is there anything else that anyone has to add?
There will be war paint. Cover the night, we like our war paint.
Oh, yeah.
I have something to add, not about Cover the Night, but just about some things that were said before about fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed like at some point somebody implied or strongly suggested that lobbying for a senator may not be as fun as putting on war paint. I think somebody said that at some point.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I did
okay.
that.
And I think, actually, like, Randy, hearing you talk about how, you know, you got really hooked was working on this bill.
Right.
So, I mean, it can, and that, I mean, it's, I think maybe fun is not the right word, but, like, intense and... Can you just describe what it was like to work on that?
Yeah, I would use the word fun to describe it. Cool. I met a lot of people, and it was a new experience. And not only that, but when you're lobbying, a lot of times you get to travel, and traveling in itself is definitely a fun thing. But going away from the fun side of it, it's definitely a very powerful feeling to know that I went to Washington, D.C., I spoke with senators, representatives, lawmakers, and it produced tangible results. This actually happened because of what I did. So, you know, while it's not as crazy as, you know, drinking three cans of Monster, putting war paint on your face and running around campus, you know, using duct tape and wheat paste to stick flyers and posters up everywhere, it's definitely, you get a much better feeling knowing that you've actually produced tangible results by actually campaigning and lobbying for this.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, like putting up a poster is a tangible result. And it is something you see. But the difference is that there's a certain kind of like skill set that you have to, it's a type of mastery. And I just want to throw in some psychological research that, you know, sort of it's called mastery motivation. And it's when you see yourself doing things for the first time that require a certain skill set. And that really has a sort of developmentally awakening. It's formative. And, you know, it's sad for people to stay within the status quo and if they're just putting up posters all the time. I mean, as long as they're mastering something else. But I think what it's important to point out is that, you know, given the range of experiences, there is like a fun experience in doing real work. And it's just that you have to sort of know that there's work other than putting posters involved. And it does require a type of commitment and attention to detail that people, I think, Erica, you say maybe people are intimidated by it. But yeah, so I agree. I think that can be a lot of fun as well.
Right.
Welcome to the Freak Club.
Yeah, I was going to say, it also, a lot of the fun definition also is, it depends on how nerdy the person who uses the word fun is.
I don't know. I mean,
like, I define myself as a giant nerd. So I don't mind, like, going to Carl Levin's office and being like, hey, you should co-sponsor this bill. Oh, you are? Okay, great. Like, I see that as fun because I'm a nerd and I like politics and the government. But people who hate that, I don't know. It kind of depends.
I wouldn't say it's nerdy. I'd say it's definitely something more people need to be aware of, politics and the government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would say at this moment, the people who are aware of it are mostly nerds. Yeah.
Any other comments anyone might have or closing remarks possibly from Caitlin and Randy? I want to make sure you guys have a chance to say anything else about your organization.
Yeah, I guess if you're interested in Invisible Children itself, you can check out invisiblechildren.com. Like I mentioned earlier, there's information, links to videos, and all of the financial statements are all available online. And then if you're interested in our club, we do have a Facebook page you can check out. It's Invisible Children at CMU. It's facebook.com/groups/ is it CMU Invisible Children, Caitlin?
Invisible Children CMU.
Invisible Children CMU. Anything else?
Our meetings for any of the listeners on campus is actually like right now. Tuesdays at 8:00 in ANSA 168. Yeah.
Cool, and thank you for talking with us about CONI 2012 and your organization. I really appreciate all the insight that you gave and explanations to how this organization operates and how you came to be, and I thank you for your work and talking with us tonight.
Yeah,
anything else, Hope? No? All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.